سلام علیکم و رحمت الله.
سلام علیکم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. All praises are Allah's, Lord of the world. And may His peace and blessings be upon our Master, the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and His pure, immaculate Ahlul Bayt. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Inshallah, tonight and tomorrow night we'll be exploring the concept and theme of shafa'ah, intercession. And the different sciences within Islam approach this subject in different ways. For some sciences, it's only a matter of finding traditions on shafa'ah within Shi'ism and outside Shi'ism, and that's enough for them. But with the urafa'ah, they dissect this concept and try to convey to us what the essence is and where the essence of shafa'ah lies. And that which becomes apparent after reading through the different understandings of shafa'ah according to different sciences within Islam is quite a big difference, and the impact can be significant. During the last few nights, we've been discussing how one's parents can make one Jew, Christian, Zoroastrian, or other ideological beliefs or thoughts. Here, with shafa'ah, if one doesn't be careful, they can acquire beliefs which are very similar to what many denominations in Christianity believe in. Anyway, I want to discuss Imam Khomeini's position on shafa'ah as an arif. He was a philosopher, arif, ethicist, faqih, usuli. In all sciences he had that expertise. But as an arif, he's opened shafa'ah in a very important way, and that's what I want to open up. Before doing so though, there's a bit of groundwork I need to cover. And this groundwork I went into depth last year. And some of you may have been here, some of you may not have been. But for the sake of those who are listening to this for the first time, I won't go through all the groundwork. But the groundwork entails two verses of the Quran and one holy tradition, and then we'll start Imam Khomeini's exposition on shafa'ah. The verses in the Holy Quran, one verse is chapter 36, verse number 54, if I'm not mistaken. But the verse reads, فَالْيَوْمَ لَا تُظْلَمُ نَفْسٌ شَيْئًا. Therefore, on the day, in the hereafter, no soul shall be wronged. No soul shall be wronged at all. Other verses explain what this means, like the verse, وَلَا تَزِرُ وَازِرَةٌ وِزْرَ أُخْرَى. And no one shall bear the burdens of another. See, this concept of no one bearing the burdens of another doesn't apply to the physical realm of existence, because we do. That's very apparent. This is in relation to the hereafter. There's no room for someone bearing the burdens of another. It's all one's self that matters, and oneself will manifest in the hereafter. In the first verse, it said that no soul shall be wronged. It gets what it deserves, to the dot. Moment to moment, one's actions, whilst one is living in this world, from moment to moment, they're building their hereafter. Hell, heaven exist right now, and you're building it. It's only after physical death it'll become apparent to you. In the verses it says, "Well, burrizat in jahim." It's only in the hereafter it just manifests. It becomes apparent. Not that it becomes established later on. It's established right now. It just appears now before you. Before you didn't have access to see it, now you do. Although some people can, and we're prescribed to try and see it before physical death. Mutu qabla an tamutu. No soul shall be wronged. You get what you deserve. To the dot. Don't blame anyone else. Then that first verse continues. وَلَا تُجْزَوْنَ إِلَّا مَا كُنْتُمْ تَعْمَلُونَ. And your recompensation is nothing. لَا تُجْزَوْنَ. You won't be recompensed. But for that which you did, your actions, your recompensation is nothing but your actions. This illa, except, but for, whenever it's preceded by a negative clause and succeeded by something positive, know that that which is before and that which is after illa, it's one reality. And here, and this applies throughout the Holy Quran, it's a very important formula that the Urafa have given. And here, with this formula, you see that recompensation is nothing but one's actions. Your actions, okay, the hereafter, the reward or punishment is vertical to your actions, but even more than that, that punishment or reward is your actions. It's just actions manifest in this physical realm in X or Y way. But the very reality of this action, once it's incorporated within, in another realm of existence, it will manifest in another way. It's Yawmul Akhir. It's another manifestation, the hereafter. Another. It's not a dunya. That's one of the preliminaries I wanted to explain. Another verse is chapter 3, verse 30. يَوْمَ تَجِدُ كُلُّ نَفْسٍ مَا أَمِلَتْ مِنْ خَيْرٍ مُهْدَرًا. That on that day, every soul will perceive the good that it has done present before itself. It's a seeing that one perceives before oneself. It's not an acquired form of knowledge. It's a huduri, immediate form of knowledge. Like how one perceives one's happiness or disappointment or pain. It's not acquired. Or like how one perceives one's dreams. One's dreams are in unity with one. One is in the presence of one's dreams. Dreams are a product of one's soul. It's not to do with the outside world, one seeing something and acquiring that knowledge. On that day, every soul shall see the good that it has done before itself. And it shall see the bad. وَمَا عَمِلَتْ مِنْ سُوء, the bad that it has done. But there are all dimensions of the soul. And then it says tawaddu, its own wish. لَوْ أَنَّ بَيْنَهَا وَبَيْنَهُ أَمَدًا بَعِيدًا. If only there was a great distance before it and those bad actions. If only, it's a wish that if only there was a distance between the soul and the bad that it has done. But this if only, in Arabic syntax, they call it the impossible type of if only. If only there was a great distance. It's impossible for there to be a great distance. Why? Because you, the soul, you are your actions. You are your actions, according to the logic of the previous verse. How can you be segregated from your actions? If only there was a great distance, but it's impossible. You can't be segregated from it. And then the tradition, this is just a groundwork to our lecture, I just thought to go through for those who have just come. I'm just going through verses and traditions before we start the actual explanation of Shafa'a according to Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. Inna dunya mazra'atul akhirah. The world is the hereafter's farmyard. Here Mullah Sadra has given a very important commentary. That here, verily, this world, it's the hereafter's farmyard. But who is the farm? You. You're the farm, the soul. Who is the farmer? You are the farmer. Who is the seeds, or who are the seeds? Your actions, you, what emanates from you. And who is the harvest? You again. It all rotates around the soul. The hereafter is the soul manifesting. Okay. And this we call tajassumul a'mal, embodiment of one's actions. And it all is right now, but it will just manifest. It will appear before you in one realm. However, it all exists right now. Embodiment of actions. Okay. So with that introduction, let's go and see what Imam Khomeini, because this helps in relation to the aspect of Shafa'a, it's important. Because this embodiment of actions, it's a cause and effect relationship. Because we're saying the action and the reward or punishment, it's one reality. Different realm of existence. You do this action, right now, this is the consequence. And it exists in heaven or hell, depending on the action, right now. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَأْكُلُونَ أَمْوَالَ الْيَتَامَى ظُلْمًا, those who consume orphans' property wrongfully, إِنَّمَا يَأْكُلُونَ فِي بُطُونِهِمْ نَارًا, they're only consuming fire in their bellies. Only. إِنَّمَا. Right now it's happening. Nothing else. But it's happening right now, we don't see it because it's not physical. If it was physical, we would have seen it. But the reality of that other manifestation, the hereafter, it's not physical. Okay. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, says, one of the misfortunes that we Muslims are facing, and which is in its own right extraordinarily unfortunate, is that we are interpreting the divine traditions and customs and believing that the question of the hereafter and one's recompensation there is conventional and arbitrary in nature. It's like speeding and getting a $20 fine, £20 fine. There's no cause and effect relationship here. The £20 fine is something arbitrary, it's something conventional, man-made. There's no relationship between these two. Imam is starting like this. He's saying it's unfortunate that Muslims, when it comes to the question of the hereafter, instead of believing your actions are your recompensation, and it's a natural cause and effect relationship, we're interpreting it as something arbitrary. We're interpreting the hereafter as something arbitrary, conventional, where our actions and that which will be recompensed, they have nothing to do with one another. There's no takwini relationship. We do this with our intellects. Not intellects that we have, not intellects that have been accurately nurtured under the auspices of the Sharia, but rather intellects that have been fostered under the auspices of unworthy, deficient ones. Imam now is shedding his disappointment with many people and scholars. The problem is these intellects are nurtured under the auspices of people who are not worthy, deficient people. And then he's going to attack them. He attacks the manbaris, those who speak on the pulpit. There's a reason why he does that. It's going to come in a minute. And we believe that the servant's merit of being punished or rewarded is arbitrary or conventional, and that the Master, Allah, based on this arbitrary matter, either punishes and or just puts an end to it all and says in the hereafter, I have pardoned you, you may leave. If one is in hell, Allah says, I've pardoned you and you may leave, as an arbitrary, in an arbitrary way. Or someone will come and say, I beg you to let me go free, and that's it. And we have deemed this to constitute the reality of intercession. Either someone says you're free, or someone begs that, can you let me free? I beg you to let me, you know, free me from hell. And they say this is the reality of intercession. And Imam wants to attack this approach. Furthermore, some of our manbaris have extended and exaggerated the matter for themselves in order to be given a pulpit. The aspect of intercession they've exaggerated to such a degree to ensure that certain communities who suffice with the deficient interpretations of religion, but they satiate themselves on it, they will give him a pulpit to speak. And he's exaggerated this matter because he knows this is what they want. Religion is being martyred here. And some of them have simply not understood these manbaris and have subsequently, I mean, no one has the audacity to speak like this. Certainly I won't, but this is Imam Khomeini speaking. He has that right. Whoever you are in the Muslim world, you're indebted to him for what he's brought to you. There are some scholars who have called him Shaitan. And these scholars are coming with a certain disguise towards the people. I'm not saying in England, generally in the world. And one has to be very careful here. Those scholars may want to hide what they've said in the past, but their classmates of old know what they've said. The reason those classmates aren't bringing it out, because they're advised by their mentors not to bring it out. It's not good to embarrass people. But I'm saying this approach, to call someone like Imam Khomeini shaitan, it's unjust, it's very immature, but more importantly, according to the logic of traditions, they're looking in the mirror. Someone came to the Holy Messenger was walking with his companions. Someone came to the Holy Messenger and said very bad things to him and said, you know, I hate you, this is an idea. The Holy Messenger was patient. And then they continued his route. Someone came and expressed his utmost love. The companions were a bit perplexed. Why would someone say so many bad things to the Holy Messenger and the other one utmost love? Genuine love, not just, you know, just speaking words. And that hate was genuine. And then the Holy Messenger gave a formula. He said, we are mirrors for people. They see themselves in us. That's why sometimes in your dreams, if you see a scholar doing something very bad, although it depends on the dream, it's just reflecting you. You have to, don't interpret it the other way around. Someone who attacks Ayatollah Bahjat, for example. Yes. Someone who attacks Ayatollah Hassanzadeh Omoli. And there are others too. I don't want to enter this discussion too much. But whoever attacks someone, you know, there's something wrong there. You have to be careful. Anyway, here, Imam Khomeini, let's not divert too much. He says, and these Mambaris simply have not understood. And subsequently, they've taken a certain meaning from a given tradition without acknowledging either the tradition's authenticity or its meaning. And by way of example, Imam says, assign the master of martyrs, Sayyid al-Shuhada, as an intercessor who will intercede for whoever dies, and that Allah will let go the conventional punishment that was awaiting the person, and he will no longer be punished. That is their understanding. That someone's done wrong, he's awaiting a conventional, not a natural taqwini cause and effect punishment. He's awaiting an arbitrary punishment, and then the Master of Martyrs will act as an intercessor with Allah, and Allah will let go of that conventional punishment. And this is how it becomes very similar. I'm not saying the same, but can easily fall in the steps of Christianity and how they view Nabi Isa. Because underlying there, his dying for our sins, underlying that statement is the rationale of an arbitrary punishment. Only those who believe in an arbitrary punishment can fall into this trap. Now, everyone wants to explain all this. Then he says, but punishment there in the hereafter is tantamount to the direct emanation of the servant's soul and to the individual's identity being based upon the manifestation of the disposition's outcome. You see, as we discussed in the beginning, punishment there is a direct consequence. It's vertical to one's actions. It is one's actions. Don't treat it as something arbitrary. It is your actions. It's happening right now. Can such outcomes ever be discarded simply on request? When something is a natural cause and effect relationship, actions, cause, the punishment, the effect, it's one reality. When it's a natural process, can it be discarded? Could that punishment, which is not separable from the action, can it be discarded merely on request? Merely by someone saying, I beg you to let it go? Is it as simple as that? Tawaddu lo anna baynahu wa baynahu amadan ba'ida. Of course it's not. It's nothing to do with a mere request and then that great distance will arise for you. It's a real natural process. Then Imam says, is the issue of intercession like the merit of being punished that we have in mind, so that we compare this form of pardoning, because intercession in the hereafter is a form of pardoning, and we compare this form of pardoning to as being conventional and arbitrary, like pardoning that occurs in this world? Is that how we're seeing intercession? Pardoning in this world, yes. When he's fining you £20, and you say, please, let it go this one time. That is pardonable. Because that £20 is an arbitrary matter. It's discountable. Arbitrary matters are discountable. They're pardonable on request. But this is something else. This is a natural, real, takwini, providential, existing reality. It's not as simple as just requesting it and it will go. We have the means of arrogance before us, the Muslims, especially Shias. We have the means of arrogance before us. Some people may say these Wahhabis are speaking against Shias in a very bad way, and they're propagating lies, and they're right. Without a doubt, these Wahhabis with money, they've succeeded in almost predominating over all the mosques in this country and other countries. Even the four schools of the Sunni four schools have been totally overcome by this Wahhabi phenomenon. And they're spreading lies against Shiism. I'm sorry just to take, because some people have told me to speak about this, so I'll just give you my 2 cents, so to speak. I'm not very good with analysing social issues, so don't take it personal. This is just since they told me to speak one or two words on this. What the Wahhabis are doing is similar to hate crimes. They're spreading hate. And we have to act. Now these da'wah tables that we see throughout London and other cities too, it's a good idea. As long as your intention isn't to convert people. You don't need to convert people. There's no duty for you to convert people to Islam. You just have good mannerisms, good actions. Then people will come to you, then you answer their questions. However, these da'wah tables is good, not for converting, but to tell people why what the Wahhabis are saying is wrong, and to lessen this hate that is rising against the Shias, at least amongst the non-Muslims. At least. So that it doesn't, you know, become more and more. You have that duty as ambassadors in this country, not to convert, not to give a speech, because you probably don't know how to give a speech unless you've studied properly. And if you start speaking, giving speeches when you're not qualified, you'll do more harm than benefit. Don't convert, don't give speech, just go on a da'wah table and just these dilemmas that are spreading against Shiism, you try and sort it out for the common lay person and the common lay Muslim too. That much you have a responsibility towards. Yes. Now, having said all that, and it's wrong what the Wahhabis are doing, but still, and I stress this, that although what they're doing is very wrong, don't think that they are the cause. The cause for the state of affairs of Shiism throughout the world are the Shias primarily, not the Wahhabis. As I say, I'm not very good with analysing social issues, don't take this personal, but even the cause of phenomena like Daesh and ISIL and these kind of things, the cause is this disunity amongst the Shias and this total absence of action that we have. And now we come to this point, the arrogance that us Shias have in relation to our religion, and we think it's only us in the hereafter. And that, with a simple majalis, with a simple crying, this and that, everything is sorted out for us. Imam is calling this arrogance. He got it from his mentor, Muhammad Ali Shah Abadi. He's written a book on this. He said, this is the ultimate cause of all this mayhem. It's the arrogance that we Shias have. And it's all because deen, religion, has been understood wrongly. Okay, let's not go too much in that line. We have the means of arrogance before us, and Shaitan makes these means appear in disguise for the holy and religious people. See these? Moreover, those who aren't even religious at all, they don't pay any heed to religion, they express no feelings of regret or remorse when listening to such interpretations, because they sin and believe they'll be forgiven with a tear. That intercession that is expressed by the texts, the holy book and the traditions, and which is indisputable amongst Muslims, embraces and includes a very small and limited number of people, almost deemed non-existent. By no means will it be applied on the excessively comprehensive scale that we have taken for granted, i.e. that however much man sins and commits oppression, intercession will still be allocated to them. No, this is not the case. Why? Because intercession, shafa'a, comes from shafa. Shafa means pairing in Arabic. Intercession comes from shafa, which means being paired. When it is said that Allah's wali will intercede, it means that the light of wilaya appends to, joins, the light of one who is seeking intercession. And the two lights pair up and intermarry. This is true marriage. Marriage in this world is one form. Marriage with houris is a better form than marriage in this physical way. But it's immaterial. Houris is a term which, because some women, they say, why the term houris is female and it only applies for men. Huri in Arabic is plural. It's plural. The plural of what? Of ahwar and hura, which applies to female hura and ahwar, the male. So every time you see huris, it applies to men and women, both. It's not only for men. What was marriage, though, in that realm of existence isn't like the arbitrary conventional marriage here. It takes another form. It doesn't have the rules and regulations and contracts that it has in this physical, arbitrary realm. Anyway, that's one form of marriage, but true marriage is marrying Allah's wali. That is also marriage. So when it's said that Allah's wali will intercede, it means that the light of wilaya joins the light of one who is seeking intercession. And the two lights pair up and intermarry. And the former light, the light of the person who is seeking intercession, attracts... seeking intercession attracts and takes the latter light with him. But as long as the servant carries no light, how can pairing or the marriage of the two lights be deemed feasible? So you need a light before intercession, that intermarrying, that shaf, is even deemed feasible before you. Otherwise, it's a no-go area. That light which you need before intercession becomes ready has to be acquired in this world. It's not to be acquired in the hereafter. Now we're getting closer to what the essence of intercession is. Don't go in that realm and then say, can I have intercession? Intercession has to be acquired in this realm of existence. Right now. And here comes the important definition of intercession that Imam has given in another of his works. He says intercession is embodiment of actions. The tajassum al amal. Which actions? The guidance that you incorporated within you from the awliya. How much guidance did you receive and incorporate within yourself from the Imams and other awliya in this world? That will manifest as intercession. If you've acquired nothing, there'll be no intercession there. Is Shafa'a, Imam continues, is Shafa'a going to be realized in a manner towards which we have become complacent and self-conceited? The answer is no. The principle of shafa'a is indisputable and may be undeniable, but the point pertains to the manner of its realization. it has been forwarded in a manner that cannot be accepted with assurance. The Quran has raised the issue with utmost complexity and has very ambiguously said, who is it that grants intercession without Allah's permission? Without His permission? Who is it? Who can? No one can. Because in another verse in the Holy Quran, قُلْ لِلَّهِ الشَّفَاءَةُ جَمِيعًا. Shafa'ah, in all its various forms, is Allah's. His permission is required. Save without His permission. إِلَّا مَنْ أَذَنَ لَهُ الرَّحْمَنِ. In other verses, save those that the All-Beneficent has granted permission. Or in other verses, إِلَّا مِنْ بَعْدَ أَنْ يَعْذَنَ اللَّهِ. It comes in various forms. But the point is this. Can intercession be realized without Allah's will? Is it known when and at what occasions Allah will grant permission? It may take, these are His words, 2,000 million years before that is granted intercession. It may even not be granted to Shias. It may even not be granted ever. For sure, Allah's permission has to be granted, but only when the servant's light has the potential to accept marriage with the light of Walaya. But if the light of the servant is left under the manifold layers of darkness, one on top of the other, and the veils of concealed shirk and evil dispositions are surrounding him or her, under such circumstances, is their marriage with the light of Allah's wali even conceivable? Of course not. We are talking about divine will and permission here. Divine permission is not to be compared to my and your permission, which is conventional and arbitrary. Divine permission isn't Him, Allah, just saying, I have granted you permission. It's a real providential permission. And this permission, like Allah's forgiveness, is something real. His mercy is real. These are objective and external realities. And over there, there's no room place for arbitration. There's no room place. Whatever happened is a result of what's happened here. It's a cause and effect relationship. How much guidance from the Imams primarily, and those under the Imams, did you incorporate in this world? That will manifest as intercession in the hereafter. Now, this has a bit more. Imam speaks a bit more on this. And there are some important aspects. Because the concept of hell becomes more apparent. Inshallah, we'll continue with this and finish this tomorrow. Just with a few minutes remaining, tonight is the eve of the ninth, the eve of Tawsu'a. With your permission, I'll just give a few words of bereavement and